Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It is June 11th, 2022, and this is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC, or you can email me, jason@overthecap.com. As always, I am joined by Nelly the Bunny. Nelly, anything? No. Nelly already got a treat, so Nelly, I'm sure, is very happy about having one of her snacks, and I'm sure she'll interject with some water drinking or something later on. We're back to a Saturday night this week, so we have our Cape May IPA, so we have the return of our IPA for our beer of the night. This is pretty typical one that I have a lot, so I've spoken about this one many times. You know, I like it, it's good beer. Most of the stuff from Cape May Brewing is pretty good, and I always mention this, except for one that's called Mop Water. Not a big fan of that one. So I think the main topic to talk about today is Aaron Donald, maybe to a lesser extent Cooper Kupp and the Rams overall. But so many questions came in after Aaron Donald becomes the first player in NFL history, for a non-quarterback, I should say, to sign a contract that averages over $30 million a year. I wrote about it. I'll talk about some of the stuff here and then get a little into some of the questions that I got during the course of the week, not necessarily for the podcast, but just general questions on it. So the average value of this deal is $31.67 million. You can argue it's a little bit less than that based on the fact that he was going to get a 17th game check kind of before in there, and that's got to get factored in now. Just if in terms of looking at like a raise over what he got before and that kind of stuff. But I mean, this is basically the number. You know, the first 2 years of the deal will be $30 million a year. Then the decision point really is in the third season where there's an option. There's a $5 million guaranteed roster bonus, but there is a option bonus that year that they can basically they can pick up or they could release him. Let him become a free agent at that point. So they're probably looking at this as a $30 million a year contract and then a decision point. And I would imagine part of the thinking is that in 2024, he's going to be 33 years old. He already kind of talked about, and I'll say quote unquote retirement, because I think that that's becoming a new thing that teams are going to have to worry about here. But I think you can look at someone who could be considering retirement at that point in time, or as a possibility, maybe. I wouldn't think this one as much, but you never know. You know, could be coming off an injury, could be coming off something that sees the play decline as a player ages, and they might be looking at that as a year where they could drop the salary down anyway. If they did release him that year, it'd be 22.5, it'd be 27.5 on the cap on a release, 22.5 on a retirement. I don't think there's any way they would release him, given what they did here to make sure that he was happy. I don't think a release would really be even in the mindset. And he has a no trade, so they're not going to trade him. You know, unless he demands a trade, which I also don't see happening just from the amount of time that he's spent on this team. So I think the way that they would probably look at this is that they would look at this as a situation where maybe he would retire, or they would bring the contract number down from his salary that year, which is $35 million, to maybe something that's going to be a little bit more manageable, which at that point in time might be $25 million. You know, it's the market numbers are going to increase. The deal itself is just incredibly noteworthy. I've never really seen anything like this before. Donald was signed already for three seasons, and the three seasons were worth, let me see. Oops, this is his new contract. Let me get out his old one. So you had the three seasons that were going to be worth, let me just make sure I get the numbers right, $55 million. It's actually going to be about $57 million once you count those extra game checks that he was going to get, but let's just call it $55 million. And they basically threw him an extra $40 million to make him happy. So this is basically unheard of in the NFL. This is something that probably pisses off 29 or 30 other teams. I would think the Eagles are probably okay with it. And Browns maybe are okay with it. You know, there might be another team or two, but for the most part, this is the kind of stuff that just pisses people off around the league. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it, just that it's very different. Like, they didn't even throw a couple token years on the end of this contract to make it look like an extension. They just basically said, okay, you're unhappy and we'll tear it up. And I think the overriding theme here, and this goes for just all the teams in the league, I think you have to be aware now that you're going to start to have players when they're in leveraged positions. And I don't think a leveraged position anymore has to do with the amount of years that you're under contract. I think your leveraged position has to do with how well you played the prior season and how well the team did the prior year. And I think when you get that leverage position and you've already made your money in a second contract, Aaron Donald made a lot of money in his last contract, and you can bring up the R word of retirement the same way Aaron Rodgers did, the same way on a coaching side McVay did. You're going to have to be cognizant when you do these first deals with them as a veteran player that there's probably going to be a chance 2 or 3 years into a long-term deal that they're just going to threaten to be done, and they're going to leverage you into a really bad contract. There's a big difference, especially in media perception and the way that these stories are handled. When a player threatens to hold out because they're unhappy with their contract, it's probably a 50-50 split. It used to be probably a 25-75, 25% in favor of the player, 75% against the player. Now I think it's more of a 50-50 split. I think there is more of a belief that the younger players in particular are probably underpaid relative to their production and that they deserve another deal. But when you go the holdout route, a lot of times there's a lot more negativity on it. When you go the retirement route, people move much more on the player side because you start to get this, oh, don't retire, please don't retire, I hope he's not going to go away. They have to do whatever they can to make sure he's there to help the team. We don't want to see him go away, he's such a special player, and so on and so forth. And it really changes the narrative as to the way that it's approached. So obviously, what makes you a lot happier? Well, you know, if you bump my salary a lot. So that's really what happened here. It's what happened with Aaron Rodgers. The Deshaun Watson situation is a little different, but in some ways, I think you could say something happened there. So I think this is just one of those things that teams are going to have to consider in the future. In terms of the contract, you know, the other stuff, I mean, it just blows away the market. You know, rare event, guy resets market 2 times in his career. Trent Williams did it to a much lesser extent. Darrelle Revis came close, but really didn't do it. I can't really think of that. There's probably some older players who did it, and there's quarterbacks who have done it. From a non-quarterback to be able to do this, I mean, it's pretty much unheard of. Second highest valued contract right now was $21 million at this position. So a $10-plus million jump on the position is absolutely massive. You know, it's just a gigantic gap from one player to the next. Now, I think you make an argument, and I'll talk about this in a minute, that you probably value him more along the lines of an edge. And I think when you get into a 31 versus a 28, you probably get a little bit closer in terms of a market number. But still, normally we don't see that those kind of jumps with these markets. You know, once in a while you do. When he signed his last deal, I think the jump went from like 17, 18 million a year to 22.5. Khalil Mack went from 19 to 23.5. And then, you know, it's been, when you look at the pass rushers, you know, it's small jumps, 23.5 to 25 to 27 to 28. Now you're jumping to 31.7. That's a pretty big jump. Difference in length, so that there's some differences in that to make it a little bit hard to compare just on annual value. But, you know, you do get a lot of stuff there. In terms of cap hits, a lot of the cap on this is deferred to the future. It's a $27 million cap hit in 2022. It's a $26 million cap hit in 2023. And then in 2024, you're looking at either 27.5 dead, 22.5 dead, or 34.17 if the contract is unchanged. And then you'll have a big cap number if his contract voids. I think I have the wrong number here. For some reason, I feel like I do. But I might just have a mistake in there. I'll check this one out after the fact. The prorated number is wrong in there. In fact, I probably should fix that right now. I think it's wrong. Let me double check that. Yep, and I did have that incorrect. So that actually changes the numbers here. So it's 28.5 if he retires. It would be over 30 million if he's released. The following year would be 29.3 if they allow the contract to void. I would guess that if he does play the contract out and was going to retire, they'll do something like these other teams do with these, you know, the way that you can kind of use to manipulate to a June 1. Philadelphia has been the main one that does it. They do it proactively. We've seen the New Orleans Saints do it occasionally. Saints typically do it in season. The Eagles do it ahead of the game. The Browns are starting to do it now, too. So the Browns are going to be the next one to get in on this, which makes sense. They come from Philadelphia, so they're going to study that. I think that game plan that those guys come up with and kind of utilize that to their advantage. And I think they're the next team that's going to hop on that with a lot of their contracts. So I would imagine that's probably in the game plans here, too, for what they do. Now, the biggest question that I got on this is Aaron Donald worth $30 million a year? And I think you can make a case that he definitely is, or at least the fact that you're not killing yourself by doing something like this. You know, Donald is a really unique player, and I'm going to take age out of it for a second. The age is something a little bit different. You know, you're talking about a player who's 31, so you want to pretend that he's never going to slow down, but with the exception of Tom Brady, we see every player slow down at some point in his career, and usually defenders earlier, you know, sooner rather than later. But, you know, let's assume for a minute that he doesn't, and we're just going to base it kind of on past performance. And like I said, you're really valuing him more against the edge rusher market, kind of the same way J.J. Watt was years ago, even though J.J. Watt was not a typical edge. You know, he was an edge player, but people would probably look at him at the time as a 3-4, you know, that it was an aggressive 3-4 setup where he was going after the passer. But if you look at your, just over the last 2 years, I went to PFF to look these numbers up just to get there. I mean, Aaron Donald as an interior defender has 184 pressures in the last 2 years. Next closest player is at 125. And you got 123, 114, 109, 103, 102. So, I mean, the disparity is gigantic here. Doesn't miss a game. He has the most snaps at the position in the league. He plays a ridiculous amount of time. He plays almost 100% of the snaps. So he's got over 1,900 snaps in the last 2 years. There's no other player at the position with even 1,800. He has 30 sacks in the last 2 years. Next closest player is Leonard Williams at 21. That's the only other player above 20. You have DeForest Buckner at 19. And, you know, he plays basically every game. So you look at these things and, you know, he is an outlier player. And it's not just an outlier season. It's a outlier career. It's consistency that's so far above everybody else. You know, you'll have some other players up a year, down a year, up a year, down a year. He's just always up. You know, there's no such thing as mediocre. Mediocre for him would probably still be top of the league at this position. Being able to generate a pass rush from the interior or from a position that, you know, even on the end, which is not really where your traditional rush is going to come from, especially when you've got your, you know, your actual linebackers coming in there and coming off the edge itself. You're creating mismatches that teams just can't prepare for. And I think it's one of the things that makes him so unique and so valuable. You look at a lot of players on defense. You look at the great pass rusher, all right? And your great pass rushers are mainly going to operate against left tackles and occasionally right tackles. Maybe it's a mix of both these days, even though traditionally we focus more on the left tackle with that. There's a lot of decent pass rushers in the NFL. All right. If you look at just the veteran players, players on veteran contracts, like I mentioned before, you got TJ Watt, Joey Bosa, Myles Garrett, Max Crosby now. You've had Khalil Mack and Von Miller and Cam Jordan. Jordan's more of an interior. He's kind of a hybrid, I guess you would say. But yeah, you put him on the edge. You got Landry, Barrett, Chandler Jones. And then, you know, you've got the younger players who aren't on those deals yet. The point being that there's enough solid pass rushers in the league to where you probably have confidence in your left tackles, because your left tackles have played against a number of good pass rushers. When they practice, they're probably practicing against decent pass rushers. Not every team, but a lot of teams. So they have experience on it. Same thing with a cornerback, right? You're a corner. You're a good corner. You probably match up at least a couple times a year with a high-quality wide receiver. So, yeah, maybe going against Tyreek Hill is something unique, and I'd consider Tyreek Hill a pretty phenomenal player. You know, but there's other players who are good receivers, and I wouldn't be worried that, well, my corner's never faced anything even remotely like that. How are they going to cover him? You know, I think I would have faith in that. When you start looking at a player like Donald, there really is no comparable. You know, if he's mainly going to be going against centers and guards, they don't play against anybody like that. They're not going to practice against anyone like that. They're not going to play games against anyone like that. I mean, there's no comparison between Aaron Donald and Leonard Williams. There's no comparison between Aaron Donald and Jonathan Allen. You know, these are all decent players in their own right. There's no comparison. So they don't play against anything like him. So all you can do is just study video. That's it. Now, if you're on the teams in that division, okay, you play him two times a year. Maybe you're at least a little bit used to it. The other teams in the league, I don't think they have any idea of what they're up against, which just makes him that much more important. And teams don't, the quarterbacks, you know, they don't typically deal with that pressure coming from up the middle. So when you have that pressure coming from there, it just creates an environment that is unique to pretty much this one team, with the way that he can generate it, the fact that he plays every snap, so you don't have to go and sign another player and do all those things. So I think in that respect, you can easily make the case that $30 million there, you know, give or take a little bit, is entirely fair for him and the way he kind of plays the game and the impact that he has on the game. So I don't think that that is out of the question at all. Even when you compare it to the position and go, okay, well, what if, these are always fair scenarios, what if you were able to sign the defensive tackle who's cheaper and pair him with another player? Wouldn't you be better off than spending your 30 on one? So you would spread out your risk a little bit more, you know, your injury risk. I still don't think you would get anywhere near the production simply because you don't have those kind of players that can generate that kind of heat. So if you wanted to go out and sign a Leonard Williams and a DeForest Buckner, let's say you'd have two players that would provide you in the last 2 years, they'd give you more, right? They'd give you about 200 pressures. You'd be paying $40 million for that. I would imagine the Aaron Donald and whomever combination that they would want to use would probably be less than $40 million and would give you over 200 pressures. So, you know, that's just to put in perspective the concept of going with other players. The other thing here that you got to remember, when we see a movement like this, now you're going to see movement within the interior defender market. Now, this one's not a long-term deal, so maybe it won't look as strong for the Rams in that sense. But Aaron Donald, who signed his last contract, I think in 2018, was a block on the defensive line. You were not going to see players get over his 22.5. That's why the cutoff at the position became Leonard Williams and Buckner at 21. You had Chris Jones was the one that gets to 20. And then you had Buckner get to 21, and then Leonard Williams matched him at 21. A little bit of a difference based on the length of the deal, but that's where they are. And then you've got the next tier at $18 million. You can compare players to Buckner and Williams. And Jones is going to look for a bigger deal too. But you can compare at least to those guys. You can make a comparison. You can compare based on times changing, salaries, whatever. When you had Donald at 22.5, you probably were not going to find a team that was going to say, you can earn more a year than Aaron Donald. Now that Aaron Donald's at 31, and we've seen the pass rushers jump. Remember, when Donald signed at 22.5, our pass rusher was 23.5. They both signed basically on the same day. So they were about the same. And if we looked at our second positions on there, like I said, the defensive interiors at that point were like Fletcher Cox and maybe Muhammad Wilkerson. And let me see what Cox was at. Maybe 17, 17.5. He was at 17.1. Wilkerson, these are the names that are just kind of popping in my head, was at 17.2. So you were at 17, and your top pass rushers at that point in time was, I think, was Von Miller, who was 19.3. So about a $2 million gap between your pass rushers and your interior defenders. So it was a smaller gap. Now your gap had grown to where your pass rushers were at 28, and your highest defensive lineman was at 22.5. So you had a much bigger gap that existed there. So now with that gone, I think what you'll see is the defensive tackle market probably naturally move up to about $26 million a year, maybe even $27 million a year. And I don't know if it'll take that long. It's probably going to depend on the players. And I'm not looking ahead to see the players who are free agents. It probably will depend, obviously, somewhat on that. You need a pass rushing interior that'll be a free agent. But obviously that's going to change. So that gap, which is $10 million or so for this year, is not $10 million. It's not going to be $10 million for all 3 years. You know, it's probably going to be just for 1 year, and that's really about it. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that aspect of it either. So the other stuff, though, that I don't like about this, and this is from the Rams' perspective here, I think it sets a really bad precedent when you start doing these deals. Now, I understand the Rams. The Rams right now are probably considered the most player-friendly organization in the NFL. They just redid Cooper Kupp's deal, gave him a massive raise. We've seen them redo contracts early on before. So I think they are getting they're going to get the treatment from a lot of players. Like, don't worry, if you sign this deal, we'll make it right in the future. So I kind of can understand why they're doing that. But one of the things that I would say for all the stuff I just outlined for Aaron Donald in the case for why he's probably worth $30 million a year, if the Rams did not just win a Super Bowl, imagine if the Rams had lost to the Buccaneers in that playoff game. The Buccaneers had the big comeback, tied the game up, and then Stafford hits that pass to Kupp, and they get the field goal as time expires to move on. They're very close to probably having lost that game. Had they lost that game, would the Rams entertain this kind of contract? And I think the answer to that is no. And I think, one of the reasons why I talk about stuff like that is just that you don't want one game, negative or positive, or two games, if you want to go to the championship game or something like that, to really dictate everything you do. But we see that happen sometimes. And I think that's really what happened here, is that you have the leverage that was created from that. And, that kind of, it changes the contract dynamic for reasons that really don't have anything to do with normal expected performance in most years. So that's one of the things. The second thing that I have an issue with, and this is more the long-term aspect of this, and this is a league-wide thing where I talked about this before. What was the purpose of the Rams doing the contract that they did if the minute that the team was really successful, he was able to turn around and just renegotiate the deal again? And again, there's nothing wrong with renegotiating a deal, even one with 3 years left. But you would like to think that there are some concessions that might come your way if that's going to happen. Now, this is more of a general discussion, I think, on NFL contracts here. But what happens is when you sign a player to a really long-term deal, and these deals are getting less and less and less that you see. Donald's deal was for 6 years. See some players that get five. Four is probably the more popular number now. But a couple sixes and fives, and then you have the couple of deals that are above that. So typically, those contracts, the way that they work, is in order for the team to get all those additional contract years, usually you pay a ton of money up front. So, you know, you pay them a ridiculous amount. So in Donald's last contract, just to give you an idea of what that payment schedule was like, let me pull this one up. Whoops. All right, let's see here. So in the extension year, the Rams gave him $34 million as a raise over his initial salary. At the end of his first contract year, let's see how much he made here. He made an extra $9 million on that. So he's up to a one-year cash flow of $43 million. Two-year cash flow of $60 million. Three-year cash flow of $80 million. So the front end of a $22.5 million a year contract actually averaged $26.7 million a year that the Rams paid to Aaron Donald starting in 2018. So to get to the 22.5, basically they had Donald take a heavy discount on the back end of the contract. So it was going to be 14.25 this year. And then it would have been 19 the next year. And then it was 21.75 to get to that. So we would have had, so our four-year APY would have been 23.5. Then you would have gotten to 22.7. And then you would have gotten down to the 22.5. So basically, if you look at the numbers here, this is the turn year. This is the year where signing the long-term deal makes sense for the Rams because they get Aaron Donald at a salary of $14.25 million, and it would have pushed the four-year value of his contract down to 23.5, 23.6. So that's the value that you get by doing that type of deal. Here's the thing. The contracts in the NFL, typically, the players don't reach those fourth, fifth, and sixth years. So more often than not, you are overpaying to get these long-term deals. I pulled up some numbers. Let me see if I still have them out here or if I got rid of them. All right. So for, you have a couple players who never actually made an extension year. Deshaun Watson got $20 million. Jared Goff got $30 million. Wentz, $29.6 million. Tyrod Taylor, $7.5 million. Beckham, $13 million. I'm not sure on that Taylor one. I got to look at that. That might have been a restructure. Robert Woods, $4.5 million. Todd Gurley, $15 million. Jalen Smith, $13 million. Tavon Austin, $6 million. Notice there's a lot of Rams here. Alec Ogletree, $3 million. Let me make sure those are right here. I think those are the right numbers as to what they earned over. That should be what they earned in new money over the other stuff here. But you had Russell Wilson got basically $45 million a year for just 2 years. Marcell Dareus played 1 year of his contract, got about $33 million from the Bills. Matt Ryan played three. His contract over that time averaged 32.75 on a deal that averaged $30 million a year. Stafford got 30.6. He was $3.7 million over his annual value. Nick Foles was $8 million over his annual value before he was gone. Brandon Cooks was 13.8 over his annual value for before he was gone. Antonio Brown, $12 million over. Stephon Diggs was 10.1. I might have that one wrong. That might be the Bills one, which shouldn't be in there. That was a that was a different kind of renegotiation. I don't think that's the Vikings one. Khalil Mack made 25.7 per year on a deal that averaged 23.5. So basically, you have all these players who are earning well over the stated annual value of their contract, and they wind up being cut or traded. So you have to start to ask yourself, if this is what's going to happen, what's the point in doing this? So back to the Aaron Donald example, you know, if we go through this, very clearly, if you look at this, and let's take the retirement talk out of this, and let's just talk dollars and cents, you're going to go from a deal that averaged paying him $26.7 million a season, and he's only going to earn $14.25 if he suits up for the Rams this year. Obviously, with that kind of structure, any player who is productive is going to ask for a raise. So if you're going to do these long-term deals, you're going to have to structure them in a way that makes sense. If you're willing to just turn around and renegotiate them the way they are. Because now, if you look at this, let's substitute these new numbers in here. So for this year, he's now going to earn 31.5. Let's put that in there. The following year, he's going to earn 28.5. They do have holdout protection that year. And then the third year averages $35 million. Pays $35 million. Oops. So now our cost, just redo that there. So our cost now went from before, where you were going to drop his annual value down from the beginning to 23. Now it jumps from 26.7 up to 27.9, then up to 28, then to 29.2. So basically, you've created a contract that could have been signed in 2018 that averaged $29.2 million a year. Could you imagine if a contract for a defensive player was signed at that kind of figure back in 2018? It never would have happened in a million years. You could have, if this was what your game plan was going to be, you could have done a deal that probably averaged $25 million a year and structured it in a way that probably would have made it happy to where the retirement talk would not have come up, because the salary would have been high enough to where maybe they would have said no, or maybe they at least would have thought about it, or maybe the thought never would have really entered their head if he was going to be earning more money then. So I think that's the first thing. If you're going to do a long-term deal, You have to be willing to get something out of that long term, because as a team, you don't want to be taking on all the risk in the contract. You don't want to. You know, there's obviously you're taking on a lot of the risk, but there's got to be some reward for the risk that you're taking. And basically, whatever reward existed for the Rams, they didn't get here. You know, when I mentioned all those other names, right, they took risks and clearly got no reward on, you know, Gurley, Goff, Ogletree, Cooks, so on and so on and so on. You balance that out, the misses, you balance out with your couple of hits. But when you constantly redo them like this, you lose out on that. So I think when you look at this and when you combine that with the fact that so few players do make it to the back end of these extensions anyway, I think teams are going to start to follow or should begin to follow a path where they're really doing contracts that are just going to average 3 years in length. Because if they had done a 3-year deal here, all right, if this was a 3-year deal that averaged 22.5 a year, which meant that they never would have gotten to this $26 million number. So it would have been 67.5 over 3. And then you added in these new numbers, now you'd get an average of $27 million a year. So at least, you'd be looking at something that I think makes a little more sense. You would have saved yourself at least a little bit. And it wouldn't look as if you're just going to rip open a deal, redo it, and, do whatever it takes to keep a player. We can argue that Aaron Donald is, outlier player and everything else. The Cooper Kupp was an outlier season and he's incredible and everything else. But you get to a point where eventually it starts to trickle down, and it trickles down from the all pro to the pro bowler. Then it trickles down from the pro bowler to the really high-end starter. And, it just kind of has a rolling effect to where eventually it might create problems with what you're having to do, especially when your team isn't necessarily coming off a successful season. Again, with both of these deals, if there's no Super Bowl or no NFC Championship game, these deals probably are not getting done by the Rams. So what happens in a year when you have a player who feels like he's underpaid, and you didn't even make the playoffs? Now you've got a nasty fight probably on your hand that's going to go kind of public, with all that stuff. So I think this is something to really watch out for in the league. I think this retirement talk of veterans is something to really watch out for in the league. And I think these are now going to be things that teams are going to have to prepare for and think about with the way they do structure some of these long-term deals to kind of protect themselves from having this happen and, kind of being. And I'm not saying the Rams were backed into a corner, but just, to prevent yourself from maybe being backed into a corner with some of these deals. As for how they can handle this on the cap, it's not that big of a deal. People make a lot of it. The Rams don't really have an incredibly expensive roster. They have some players that do. The Rams, so. The Rams, one of the things that by doing these constant extensions is that they can manipulate the cap numbers on them better than others. They bring in a lot of players via trade. So, sometimes you're baking in numbers there. If you look at their long term, don't get so blinded just by the annual value of a contract. Now, this one obviously is a legit annual value, but with some of the other things, don't get blind to that because remember you're rolling old years in there. The other things that the Rams do really well, the Rams don't pay attention to sunk costs, right? That's why I mentioned all those other players. If the Rams didn't take on the dead money and the scrutiny of the bad contracts that they did or bad decisions that they made, like Gurley, they wouldn't be able to pull off trades for Matt Stafford. They wouldn't be able to extend the Cooper Kupps and the Aaron Donalds or sign Allen Robinson in free agency. They wouldn't be capable of doing that, right? But they're willing to just say, okay, we made a mistake extending Robert Woods. We extended him and Kupp at the same time, win one, lose one. Now, maybe they made the Kupp one where they didn't get as much of a reward by doing the extension for him, but it's still, you got a hit with one player and you got a miss on the other. But they moved on. They took their lumps and said, okay, we'll work with it. Don't double and triple down and make it worse. They could have, instead of having to pay Todd Gurley to go away, however many millions they did, it was going to be far worse if they kept him and they had more money be guaranteed to where he was going to end up on the team for like another 2 seasons. You take it and then you move on. Brandon Cooks doesn't fit. You paid him a lot of money. Then you decide it's just not meshing right. Trade him and move on. They do that better right now than any organization in the NFL. The closest thing to that probably would be the Patriots, where the Patriots were always willing to move on from players, but the Patriots weren't really moving on from players after they didn't really get into a lot of these types of contracts to begin with, but they were moving on from players more from before the time of paying them. They didn't want to get involved with doing the contracts at all. And that's how they were always able to keep their roster very fluid. But the Rams have done a good job with that. The second thing is, because the Rams have gone with this F them picks attitude, well, the F them picks attitude does do something a little bit different here. And it limits the amount of money that you do have to pay to draft picks. And even when you're drafting late in the first round, you know, those signing bonus numbers are pretty decent. So you're saving yourself some cash outlay in the first year of the deal. You know, like who was the last pick of the first round this year? The safety from Minnesota? Is that who it was? You know, his signing bonus is 5.6. So, I mean, normally you'd have a $5.6 million payout locked into somebody. You don't have that. You know, obviously those contracts are very beneficial over the long term. But when you start looking at some of these types of investments, you don't have that part of the budget to worry about from your actual budget. You don't have to worry about it from the cap perspective, even though on the cap perspective, it's not that much. The other thing you don't really have to consider a lot of times is the players who typically make the most money on extensions are players who you draft and draft at the top of the draft in the first round. And those players usually are going to look for extensions after 3 years, certainly after four. The Rams don't have those players. So they don't have to worry about, like, well, you know, if we give a big raise to Aaron Donald right now, what does this mean for player X? What does this mean for player Y next year? Are we going to be able to keep him? They don't really have those pressing questions right now. And I don't think that those pressing questions are going to come up. So I think they're in a position where they can do this. Now, if you want to look for a point in time where their cap might become problematic, you know, it's probably 2024. Now, if you look at the Rams cap for next year, we have them about $3 million over, not counting carryover. It's the bottom third of the league, but it's not like disaster. It's just kind of, okay, what you see is what you get. You know, you're probably going to stick mainly with the roster that you see in front of you, maybe with some minor changes. Maybe you can add one player after you cut a player or two. But then it's the next year where they are in effective cap space, you know, way behind everyone else. It's basically the Browns at 7 over whatever we have projected. The Rams at 1.5, and then the next worst total is $33 million in cap room. So that's probably the year where you might see them pinched a little bit. But you're also probably banking on the cap maybe rising well beyond what we have here at 256. So, you know, even though relative to the rest of the league they might be in a bad position, maybe it won't be a problem. And you know, the issues should sort themselves out beyond that. And then that's the time when that particular team is probably going to have a younger roster that they need to start extending again. So I don't think that the cap issues, I don't think that's going to be as big of a deal for the Rams as it would be for other teams that have a more normal pipeline in and a more normal approach in particular to sunk costs on contracts. So I think that would be the case when we look at that. But those are kind of the worries, though, that I would just have with the way they approach this and the way that they did it and the standard that it's kind of setting for them and for around the league. I think that's just kind of what I would worry about there. As for the Cooper Kupp one, that one's a little more straightforward. You added on 2 more years to it. So the new money on this one, I'm sorry, they added 3 years to it. So the new money on this one works out to $26.7 a year. The total investment on this is 30, 50, 70, 80, 90, about 110, a little less than that. So from a cap point of view, again, this is basically going to put them in line with Davante Adams, probably. It'll put them ahead of someone like a Tyreek Hill, whose deal averages, I think, 24. The guarantees on this deal will basically end in the first new year of the contract. So you'll have maybe some guarantees in there in the fourth year of the overall contract, second new year of it. That's 2025. And, you know, you can move on from there. You know, you figure out your battle plan again. Can you bring a salary down? Because this one is a more traditional structure. $30 million the first year. Not getting into the new money, just the outlay of cash. 30, 20, 20, 20, 19, 8, 5. So there's no point in time where this contract hits like what Aaron Donald's did prior to this, to where you get a deal that a year that drops below, well below, like the $15 million, you know, or 2 years in a row that drop well below your average annual value, to where you get the wheels turning like I'm way underpaid. Here, it's just very constant, and if the play reduces, you know, you make your decisions from there. So those are really the big contracts of the week. The other one was Hunter Renfrow. There's a 2 year 16. I have a feeling that is more along the lines of what I'm talking about, where you get the annual value to hit a number, but probably if you look at the cash flows on that deal, the $16 million a year, the cash flows are probably going to be closer to the players who are at 14 a year. I still think this is a little rich for Renfrow. I don't think he belongs in that group, but you know, you'll see what happens. You know, with it, but they don't have a lot invested in that. The full guarantee is only 9. So they gave him basically, it sounds like, a $7 million raise this year. They're not going to walk away next year, but the $20 million guaranteed, I would guess that's all paid out by 2023, but who knows, maybe not. So I'm not sure how strong of a deal that's going to be, but I'll talk about that one more when I get the actual numbers on that, versus where I'm at now, which is just kind of going off a couple of random tweets here and there on that one. Deshaun Watson stuff, you know, it's just never ending. I just wish the league would decide one way or the other. You know, if they don't want to do anything for whatever reasons, take the hits now and just say you're not going to do anything. This stuff, it's ridiculous at this point. You have, so the Times published a great piece which really outlines all this stuff, outlines Texans' involvement kind of in it, which was kind of being a quiet enabler in the background, however you want to blame it, whether you want to blame it on the organization, those within the organization acting independently. However it was, there was people trying to enable him in whatever he was doing to basically say, oh my God, there's a 24th accuser. Now what? There were 23 before. Does this 24th one now sway the needle? Oh, you know, yeah, he was good before. Now he deserves a punishment. Come on. It's just embarrassing to the NFL when all these things come out. That's all it is. It's embarrassing to the league that they can't make a decision. And it doesn't make any sense. You know, this is a league that did go and suspend Ezekiel Elliott. They did suspend Ben Roethlisberger. Now, maybe they're looking for more and they need a real smoking gun. You're not going to find a smoking gun at this point any more than what is out there. And if most of it is connecting the dots, well, you got to decide. Do you connect the dots and give the penalty, or do you just give no penalty? Because it's just nonsense at this point in time. You know, and it's like every other day that you got to read about this, and oh, did this void his guarantee? Did that void his guarantee? Oh, the Browns don't want to void his guarantee. Are you surprised by that? They threw an extra $100 million on his contract and gave away 3 number one picks to trade for him. They didn't care about any of this stuff. 23, 24, 60, they don't care. Oh, they're looking to void those guarantees now. The way the contract is basically written, as long as he disclosed to them any possible person that could be involved in the current investigation, he's pretty much covered. So I am sure they advised him, any single person that you may have seen. I don't care where it was. You may have seen somebody in the mall and said hello to them, and they gave you a card. Put their name down. I am sure that's what this giant list that's talked about his contract having this clause that prohibits them from going after his salary, from voiding his guarantees if he's suspended regarding this particular investigation. I am sure he was advised to have anyone and everybody's name down on this to be, oh, that's a potential person that could come forward about something to protect himself. So the NFL needs to do something about it one way or the other. And, you know, all these different articles about it. It's like at this point, I don't know what more there is to say. You know, there's so many accusers for him. And the evidence is overwhelming. And if you want to, you know, have a blind eye to it, have a blind eye. But at least be truthful with it and just say he's not going to be suspended unless there is new information that comes to light. Just come out and say it. Don't give me this nonsense. Oh, he needs to be put on paid leave on the exempt list until they figure it out. For what? You know, what are you going to put him on the exempt list for? The exempt list is supposed to be, you're basically putting someone on there when there's an ongoing investigation. And by that, it basically means like something just comes to light. Like, in other words, somebody is arrested on a domestic violence charge on a Wednesday afternoon at the beginning of the season, second week of the season. They don't have time to investigate it that quick. You put the player on the exempt list to get him out of the spotlight, get him off the field. You do your investigation for a week or two, and then you figure out what's going on. The NFL has had over a year to do this. And you want to try and hide behind an exempt list? You're the biggest sports league in the world. Just say one thing or the other. So I'm just sick of it at this point. Like, just do something. You know, for me, he deserves to be suspended. I don't know for how long, and I don't know how long you're allowed to based on the conduct policy, but it's just ridiculous that they're not doing a thing. Just absolutely ridiculous. All right, let's get into podcast questions here. Here was a question from Scott. Listen to your podcast. I talked about Renfro being a 600-yard guy. He had 600 each of the first 2 years, had over 1,000. Would that change your view? No, it really wouldn't have changed my view on him. You know, I looked at him as last year as this was all the stars aligning. They had no viable targets. Waller was hurt a lot. You didn't really have other viable alternatives on that team. So he got a ton of passes. They were, you know, passes that were, I think they were the types of passes where you were going to put up big numbers, or I'm sorry, you were going to catch a lot of them. I guess that's the, that's probably the way to put it. So no, it really doesn't change my opinion on it that much. Obviously the Raiders were much higher than I was, but it's also clearly a protective deal where it's only 2 years in length. Because my assumption is I don't think this is going to be a situation where Adams makes Renfro better. I think this is going to be where when you have Adams and you have Waller healthy, assuming he is, I think you'd see Renfro's target share go way down. And I think his numbers will level off back to, you know, where he was before. Colby, draft question here. The Ravens drafted two players at low value, safety and center, which were consensus number ones of their respective position. Other teams grabbed high-valued but of lower consensus rank. Seahawks with third tackle, Lions fourth receiver. Question is there data suggesting that when there's a top consensus prospect at low value, such as Quentin Nelson, do they become a better pick than the secondary tier or high-value position player? I can't say yes or no off the top of my head. I could probably look at that by looking at some of the consensus stuff that I did before, where I just looked at those that rise and fall, just to see how maybe some of the positions work out in that regard. But I mean, like, I would say as an example that there's probably, you know, you look at safety, you know, Jamal Adams is a good safety. Was Jamal Adams worth the sixth pick in the draft compared to, you know, a lesser prospect at a higher valued position? You know, I think that answer very clearly is not in Jamal Adams' favor. Linemen, you know, are probably a little bit hit or miss with some of those spots that they get ranked in there. I would say center is like a 50-50 to where some of the centers end up like a Nick Mangold and others just end up as a guy that you would probably be happy to also have found in like the fourth round. I think guards probably work out that way too. But yeah, that again, that's just a little bit of my opinion on it. But I think it also boils down to the fact that even if you get the highest ranked safety on the board, let's say you get that, and let's say your second ranked safeties and your third and fourth ranked safeties are all second and third round picks, my guess is more often than not that the gap isn't that big between those players. And the gap is probably larger between, let's say, the fifth pass rusher who gets drafted in the first round and what might be the 10th pass rusher that falls all the way to the third. And then there's also an availability question. You know, I can fill my voids at safety. I can fill my voids at center. I can fill my voids at guard. I can fill those voids in free agency. I can't find a offensive tackle in free agency. I can't find a wide receiver in free agency. I can't find a quarterback in free agency. I can't find a pass rusher in free agency. I might be able to trade for some of these positions, but I absolutely can't sign them. So, you know, I think that's another way that you look at it too, is just that when you look at building your entire roster, what are your options to build it and what are the avenues to do it? And free agency is the one avenue that's open to everybody. Everyone is on an even playing field with the exception of your cap room, which is something that you kind of dig your own hole, you know, with yourself. So everyone is kind of on a level playing field. So if I can go in there and I can sign a safety for 8 or 9, I would rather take my chance on drafting a pass rusher when I can't find that player in free agency at all. And in the rare event that I could, it would probably still cost me like 17, 18 million if he's a decent, but maybe not great pass rusher. So there's more value to me in going in the draft and taking my risk there. Now, if you're talking about a major reach, whereas, you know, let's say your fifth highest pass rusher on a board has like a fourth round grade. Okay, I get it. You're not pushing him into the first round. But, you know, I think you just have to be aware of where some of those grades fall. But if a player certainly is a borderline first round, second round talent, there's much more value there, I think, than in the consensus top picks at a lower position. That's just my opinion. I'd have to look at some of the numbers on that. And I think one of the harder things is that because so few of those players do get drafted high, you do get a very small sample size that you're going to look at when you look at the data on it. But we do have some numbers there that we can look at, but you know, it's pretty small, but I'll try to, if I remember, I'll try to pull them up, from the research Brad and I did. And, you know, I could try to add a couple more in there from the last couple years. From Michael, how bad would the rebuild need to be in Tampa after Brady retires? How dire is their future cap? Yeah, they're going to go off a cliff. You know, when Brady goes, they're going to go off a cliff. So you look at where they are next year, about 52 over, and that's without Brady under contract right now. Now, if Brady doesn't retire, that'll actually create cap room, I think. What's Brady's number? No, I'm wrong. They already have that number in there. Oh, no, I don't. Hold on. Let me see what Brady's at. I have him at a 35. So they can fool around with that. They can create 20 if Brady retires, basically, with using a June 1. But, yeah, they're gonna fall into a cliff. They're going to have to get real creative with a bunch of their player contracts just to dig through it. But they're in that window, and I kind of get what they're doing. So you understand it. You just have to understand the consequences of it. All right, let's take a look at these. So I see my spell check is awesome, so I don't think I'm taking any javelin questions here. I'm surprised it does not look in all my javelin stuff. People ask me about javelin tosses, and nobody mentioned the car. I was surprised on that one. Oh, we've got a little guest appearance from Jacob here. Yes, Jacob. Let me pause this. Apparently, he has rented a movie. I think he's watching Sing. Excited about this. All right, let's see. Dave says, if you were Justin Herbert's agent or advisor, would you recommend he follow Kirk Cousins' financial path, get the two franchise tags out of the way, and just sign 2 or 3 years on top of the market? I would. If you look historically at this, the only modern player whose contract value was impacted by injury was Bridgewater. And that was just a complete freak injury. And Bridgewater was not Mahomes. You know, if that injury happened to Mahomes, I'm not sure if he would have gone on the scrap heap like that, you know, where you had to do the prove yourself through all the rehab and everything. You may have seen some kind of bridge contract and then an option into a bigger one if he could pass physicals. You look at Dallas, you know, Dallas threw the tag on Prescott. What happened? Well, you know, Prescott ended up getting hurt after just a couple games, gets an even bigger contract. The injuries just don't impact that position. And the threat of injury at the position with all the protections the quarterbacks have is so low, it's better to go that route. And here's the thing, and I was having this discussion the other day with somebody. When you look at the franchise tag is not a barrier for a quarterback. Right. If we have teams now trading 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams, trading 2 first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey, do you think they're going to care about signing a player where they're going to lose 2 first-round picks if the other team doesn't match? Now, yeah, there is the time and the effort that's spent chasing someone thinking that the other team is probably going to match it. So, you know, there's that. But you would actually potentially get to free agency. The other thing that you would consider, I think, here is that the only way you're going to get blocked from free agency is the exclusive tag. And as the salary cap numbers for the quarterbacks get higher and higher and higher, the exclusive tag numbers are going to be incredibly high. So even if that 1 year tag number is low relative to what you believe you're worth and what you would get on an extension, by the time you get into 2 and 3 tags, your numbers are sky high, and then you're still going to hit free agency. So I've said this for years. I've said this since Andrew Luck was probably in his third year. So before he signed his extension, I thought that the right path for Luck to take, and this would have been before the Cousins extension. Were they the same draft year? They might have been. So this was before the Cousins stuff played out. That everything made the most sense for him because he was so valuable to that franchise. That there was no reason for him, especially in a market that had been kind of sluggish, there was no reason for him to do anything but going year to year. Because year to year meant that he was going to make a ridiculous amount of money at some point in time. And obviously he didn't go that way. He did get the top market extension. But, you know, it wasn't nearly as much as if he would have played a bunch of tags out. But he also ended up retiring. So, that wouldn't have played in the factor there. But yeah, I think that these guys would be much better off doing that. And I think it would help out a lot of their teammates too. But, you know, that's what we get there. Let's see. Jacob says, was Cup's contract extension an overpay in regards to guaranteed money? Probably not. You know, it's... He was going to earn in the next 2 years about $30 million anyway. So you've got $45 new that's guaranteed on this. I wouldn't worry about the guarantee. I don't think it's really over guaranteed. It fits in with the way the Rams do most of their deals. I wouldn't worry about it. If it's over guaranteed by anything, I would say it's that last $5 million guarantee. I don't have my notes on that in front of me. I think that kicks in 2024. So maybe you could say, well, you know, that's a $5 million parting gift. But again, I always look at those years like that where you would say, well, you know, but you have ways that you can bring the contract values down if the play doesn't hold up. So I don't think they over-guaranteed him. I think the same question I would probably have here with the Donald thing, it's just, would you have done it if you don't come off the Super Bowl? But that's just me. Let's see. Why are there so many unsigned players from the fourth round in this year's draft? So I touched on that a couple weeks ago. So what happened is last year, the third rounders all basically maxed their contract value out. There were a couple that didn't. I think it was pretty much a given that all the third rounders would max out this year. So it was only logical once the third round completely maxed out that the fourth round picks would look to get additional salary above the minimums. Typically, fourth rounders would only get the minimum salaries every year, not the 25% raise that's allowed by the CBA. So I think the thought process was that the couple picks at the top of the fourth round could fight for it. And we've just seen more and more players hold out, waiting to see if it would happen. Now, I know some people said it was the Texans that threw a monkey wrench because the Texans, Jason even mentioned this here, that the Texans add an extra $25K. I think it's a workout bonus they threw in there or something like that. So the other players are trying to get it. The Texans were the ones that gave in. Texans did the same in the third round this year. So the Texans, or was it second? Second round, I think. The Texans are the ones that pushed the guarantee structure this year. But the holdouts in the fourth round were going to happen regardless of Houston doing the extra money. That just gave people a little extra ammunition to do it. But that strategic stuff, in my mind, that was in place long before Houston did that deal. Zach says, do you think the Donald extension is going to drive up anybody's price like Bosa, or will it be dismissed? No, it's going to drive up prices. Like it's a guarantee that Bosa, I think, makes 30 now. And I think the question is just, will that move the edges to 32? Because when Donald did the 22.5, Mac went to 23.5. And again, they were going hand in hand, but I'm sure there was some knowledge as to what those numbers were. So I think that's the... That's the thing. Justin says, would you have given Donald more money given he had three more years? My opinion was his retirement talk was never real. Should the Rams have called this bluff? Yeah, I would have called this bluff on the retirement. I think the right way to have handled that situation would have either been to do a very moderate raise or take some money from the final year of the contract and move it forward. You know, bring him up from, if he's going to earn 14, bring him up to 20, bring him up to 22. Just bring it up to the average value of the deal. And, you know, take that last year and do something like that, or avoid the last year in his deal. You know, I would do something like that. I think doing this, I think this was too much. I think when this deal came down, I think the agents were probably having a big party on this one. So that's just my opinion. But, you know, I'm obviously the Rams and a lot of other people think differently. How do my Browns think that fans were going to react to the amount of draft picks guaranteed money given to someone who tried to recruit 66 massage therapists in 17 months? I don't know. I think, you know, when we go back to it, I think the Browns knew at a national level it was going to be a nightmare. I think on a local level, they probably thought that maybe this was going to be more like Watson is the savior of the franchise, so more people would turn a blind eye. And I will say, when I make comments about it, there are a lot of people who make comments back that very clearly are in the category, not even giving it any thought, just giving it the category of like, I'm a Browns fan, screw you, don't mess with my Browns, this guy is fine. They did the, you know, they did that. They did all their research. You didn't, you know, who cares? Don't believe the press. Okay, whatever. You know, but that, I think they thought there would probably be more fans like that. If a player who has 500,000 of his P5 guaranteed for the year but retires, how is it handled for cap purposes? So if he retires before the season, he doesn't get the guarantee. So really, it's just not there. Now, maybe this is in reference to Alex Mack, who retired with San Francisco. They paid him the guarantee anyway. They paid it as a signing bonus. So if you do want to pay it, that's the way you do it. You convert it to a signing bonus and pay it out, and then let the player retire after that, or, you know, let his contract void, expire, whatever that might be. So the same way you would handle an incentive that a player came close to reaching but didn't get, you just pay it as a bonus and add it as a rider on there. Is Danny H.O. coming on the show? Yes, he's. We're gonna do our. What is it? Our what was his thing? The high javelin throwing. All right. All right. Let's see. A couple more podcast questions here. let's take a look. NFL fact checks. Have you had second thoughts about your David Njoku contract comment? No. Why would I have second thoughts on that? You can pull up all the stats that you want on it. I am not going to have any second thoughts on that. There is nothing that he has done in his career that would justify the kind of contract that the Browns gave him. Nothing. Nothing about the efficiency numbers. When the teams are putting you on the field and the ball is not coming into your hands, despite the fact that when it does come in your hands, you've occasionally been efficient with it, usually means there's other stuff going on. So no, I will not change my thoughts on that at all. And he may end up being great. Maybe he'll be a Pro Bowler. We've seen a lot of players do better. But no, I'm not big on that. What's a realistic and fair contract for Terry McLaurin and Daron Payne? So Terry McLaurin's probably 22-ish. You know, something along those lines. I think he'll fall in that category. You know, I'm not 100% certain on that, but I think that's where he would be. You know, Payne, when you look at him, you know, he's a player who plays a lot. He's not a real pressure guy. So, you know, he's a tricky one because he is a top pick. You know, top 15, right? He's picked, let me see. He's picked 13th overall. You know, I guess the question is, the distinction I'm sure that he's going to draw is you probably try to compare yourself to Leonard Williams. You know, it's a similar, I think, kind of production level in the sense that you're playing a lot. You're playing, you know, 70%+ snaps. You're going to try and throw some of your sack numbers off, probably by claiming, you know, that it's just flukiness there. And Leonard Williams had the same issues and his sack numbers have gone up, you know, in the last couple of years. So I don't know. He's not as good of a pass rusher as him. He's not as good of a pass rusher as Buckner. I think his skill set right now, I think probably lines up more with the group of players who are like, you know, 13, 14, 15 million a year. But I could very much see, you know, a push for, I just could see a push in that range. He's not going to get there though, because he's going to get blocked by his own teammate now, because Allen's more productive. Allen took a deal for 18. So I don't know. I think just from a regular standpoint, I'd probably put him at like 15 a year, but I think he's going to push for more, and you could try to push that the market's increased now, since his teammate signed. But I would put him in with the 15 million guys, but maybe he'll get close to, maybe he can convince him to go close to 18. Why doesn't the NFL have an easier path to cap relief for players like Ruggs who are dismissed from teams for conduct detrimental to the organization? This is from Dr. D. I'm talking the extreme cases like arrests. Should the league provide an easier path for relief? No, I don't think so. I think part of, and I understand that, some of these things are just really, 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 unexpected. You can never really plan for the stuff. But part of the stuff, too, is also character evaluation. I mean, you go back to someone like an Aaron Hernandez, and you hear people around the league talk about him. It's not glowing reviews, and that predates the actual, charges that were filed against him. So, I think that's part of a penalty for maybe doing stuff like that, being aware that there could be some other issues, but you're still going overboard on it. And, you do have avenues to go after players through grievances and stuff to try to recover the money. But my thought on it is, good luck doing it. But the NFL gives you so many ways for cap relief right now. I think that is less of a concern right now just because of, all the other things. All right. What will Russell Wilson's next deal look like? I would assume very close to Matt Stafford's deal. I think Stafford is going to be a logical point of reference for all these players because you have Stafford coming off a Super Bowl at 40. And you can look at Derek Carr as well, but Derek Carr's payment schedule kind of sucks. So, his annual value is a little higher, but his payouts are lower than Stafford's over the course of that contract. So I think Stafford's is what you look at. So I would guess he'll be in that range of 40 and 41 million. But, this is a big test for Russ because he's going to a new team, new organization. So all the excuses that have existed about the way that the Seahawks were treating him and not letting him cook, so to speak, you're going to get to see now if that is the case. Has Wilson lost a step and you won't start to get concerned that maybe Wilson is in that end of career slide, or does Russell Wilson still have those high end seasons left there where, he could be on the outskirts of, being discussed for an NFL MVP or something like that. If you can do the explain like I'm five explanation of how these cash bonus structure contracts for the Rams work. So basically what they're doing right now is you take a low salary for the first year of the contract and you pay them a big signing bonus. And you divide that signing bonus by five. That signing bonus just gets added to every year of the contract in an equal amount. So basically what you're doing is you're pushing money off to the future when your salary cap should be higher and you're lowering the cost now. So with the Rams deals for Kupp and Donald's cap number, I think, increased by like 500,000. I think from 26.5 to that, and Kupp's increased from 18.7. His probably decreased. 18.7 to 17.8. So, they were able to basically do extensions and keep the salary cap numbers the same. So basically lower base salaries, big bonuses, and, structure them that way. Should Washington extend Montez Sweat this year? Probably not. Now, I don't know why Washington's so bad. Like, I don't know why, if you're them, you would do anything. He missed a lot of time last year. I would wait, unless you think you're going to get some super sweet deal. I would wait and see how this year goes before you really entertain anything. They already picked up the option for 23. Right? Yeah, for 23. So I think you let 2022 play out and see where things go. Yeah, the market's probably not going to change that much. You know, Donald's already at 31.7, and I think that's going to be used as a proxy for edge rushers. So, you know, I don't think that that market is going to, you know, change one way or the other. What's the realistic contract for DK Metcalf and Deebo Samuel? You know, all kind of in there. I think DK Metcalf, I would put alongside, I think, AJ Brown at 25. I think he belongs right there. I would be more concerned with Deebo Samuel if I was the 49ers. I don't think he's going to necessarily be used in the same way. I don't know if he's going to be as productive as he was last year. And I don't know if last year is going to be the somewhat of the expectation, or it's just going to be way high end of the range of outcomes. And, you know, he's going to drop down significantly. You know, DK Metcalf, I think, just pull up some of the numbers here. You know, I would have said DK Metcalf right from the start. You know, you knew you had something pretty special. 900, 1300, 967. You know, those numbers are really good. AJ Brown. Now he's had more injury issues, but 1,000, 1,900, and then you get to Deebo, and you look at his numbers, and I think you have more worry. You know, you do have the 800 in the first year, then you've got the injury plague second year, and then you've got the explosion of 14, and I'd want to see him, you know, be in that range again. You know, or somewhere in that range again, before I'm constant on that, because I think my worry would be that he's going to be the 800-yard receiver, 700-yard receiver in this offense, just because that's the kind of offense they run, and that the numbers last year were just a byproduct of a lot of different things. You know, and I'm not paying any attention to the running stuff and all those things. And if they do that kind of stuff with him, his body's probably not going to hold up. So I don't know. I mean, numbers wise, if you just base off last year, I mean, he should get 25 a year, 26, something like that. But I'd be more concerned with him. So I would, if I was San Francisco, I think I'd probably be in the 20-21 range. And I'd want to see another year before I'm going to commit to the 25-26 range for him. Any other questions? Let's see. Schultz, 4 years, $50 million with 25 fully guaranteed. Would this be a reasonable offer, and can the Cowboys do it? So, I mean, they obviously can do it, but no, he's not going to sign for that. I think right now, I think when you have Njoku at 13.7, and, you know, some of these other players, I think the market at this point, I think if you're looking to do the long-term deal, I think it's probably going to be 14.5. I think that's the number that gets it to work. So, I mean, that's, 58 a year, so probably close to 60 on a four-year deal, is what you'd be looking at. The 25 fully guaranteed would match Henry. That would be below Andrews, who got 30. It's below Jonnu Smith, who got 32. And Pitts as a rookie is the highest at 33. So just opinion, if you wanted to let somebody really sign a superlative offer, you know, and you wanted to try to get them for 13 or less, I think you'd have to guarantee 33, 34 million to where at least you can come out, you know, fully guarantee it and say, this is the largest guarantee ever given to a tight end at signing. And injury protection wise, you'd probably have to be at 40.5 million. That would get you over Kittle. And that's a big number. You know, you're basically guaranteeing almost the whole deal. If he was willing to sign for 50, but I think that's the concession you would have to make. Now, if you want to drive the value down, you'd have to up the guaranteed portion. I would take that risk all the time. I'd rather have the value lower. I don't care about the guarantee. You know, if I can get the value lower by trading off a guarantee, I'd probably do that. But I think that would be the approach you'd have to take. Let's see. Any other questions? All right. I think that's it. All right. We got in under an hour and a half. So that's pretty good. Nelly, you have anything? You didn't really have anything. No comments? No comments from Nelly. So hopefully I'll be back next Saturday and we'll do another podcast. We'll see if I don't expect anything too interesting to be happening in the world of the NFL, but we'll see. You never know. Big deals came down this week, so maybe we'll get something there. If you have any questions during the week, shoot them over and I'll try to cover them on the podcast next week. But otherwise, everybody have a great week and I will talk to you all again soon.